Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 11th of May 2015, the podcast that puts bridge out signs on the road to perdition. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me this week is Tim Dyson. Tim, welcome back to the show.
Good day, everybody.
Let's recalcitrate the news of the bogus. So we've got more updates in the saga of mega founder Kim.com. The first one being that his extradition hearing has been delayed 3 months. They've been trying to get him extradited to the United States, even though he's never even set foot in the United States. We covered that a while back. And the procedure for extradition was set to go ahead in a few weeks. The High Court agreed to allow Kim.com to have until September 1st to go forward with that, to give him time to prepare.
So much effort. He must be a total monster.
Oh, yeah, this really hardened criminal.
And meanwhile, how many murderers and rapists and thieves are running around free and they're not getting around to it? Good grief.
Oh, yeah, because everything else is clogging up the courts. So anyway, this was the case for him and co-defendants Matthias Ortman, Finn Batato, and Bram Vanderkolk. And Justice Sarah Katz at the High Court granted the application for delaying it to September 1st, sending it back to the district court. The district court had originally denied it to them, but the High Court granted it to them on appeal. Justice Katz said, quote, "I have therefore concluded, with some reluctance, given the time that has elapsed since the plaintiffs were first brought before the courts, that the interests of natural justice require an adjournment of the 2 June 2015 extradition hearing date. This adjournment should not be taken by the plaintiffs, however, as a sign that any ongoing funding or representation difficulties, if they arise, would be likely to justify further adjournments. On the contrary, the plaintiffs must take full responsibility for preparing their extradition hearing on whatever new date is allocated, with whatever level of legal support they are able to secure." Of course, as we covered, one reason they aren't able to get the legal support they want is because the United States has frozen their assets and they can't get a hold of them to pay for the lawyers.
Oh, yeah, they got to have all these formalities so they can hide the fact that they're really just a mafia shakedown. Like was pointed out in that movie, Area 51, where they got to hand them the papers before they kick them out of their land. So why don't you just kick them out of their land and be done with it?
Yeah.
Because that would make them look bad. We got to have these formalities so we look civilized.
Oh, yeah. But fortunately, a completely different judgment seems to have worked in his favor as well. He's managed to get a lot of his seized funds released by the New Zealand courts. In addition to millions of dollars for legal expenses, he'll also get $128,000 per month, including $60,000 to pay rent on his mansion, $25,600 to cover staff and security, plus $11,300 for grocery and other expenses. These are New Zealand dollars, by the way, not U.S. dollars.
Not too bad.
And in this case, it was Justice Patricia Courtney who found, quote, "The trust's major asset is its shareholding in Mega Limited, said to be worth more than $30 million, that's $22.6 million U.S. In evidence, Mr.com said there were difficulties in selling Mega shares because they were blocked from being sold until the planned listing of Mega, which is now scheduled for late May 2015, though it is possible that this date will be pushed back. There was no evidence to the contrary. I have concluded that Mr.com does not have the ability to meet his legal and reasonable living expenses from trust assets because, on the evidence, those assets are not sufficiently liquid." She also noted that he owes his former lawyers around $1.5 million, and then his estimate for fighting his battle against extradition is going to be between $1.5 and $3 million. That will be released from government bonds that have currently been restrained. The most controversial was the accommodation costs, which are really, really high, and you think, well, gee, he's got to be able to find a cheaper place, right? But what the judge found was, quote, "If he were to terminate the lease in order to find a more modest home, he would immediately be exposed to a significant contractual liability for the existing rental in addition to the costs of any new accommodation. Little would be saved by requiring Mr.com to move into a more modest accommodation pending the expiry of the lease. It is more likely that the total amount required to house Mr.com and his children and meet his lease commitment would actually prove greater than simply remaining where he is. I therefore accept that, in the particular circumstances of this case, a figure of $80,000 per month is reasonable for accommodation." And she also allowed $25,000 a month for staff, which included cleaning, cooking, shopping, and managing the grounds and caring for his children while he's in court. Now, mind you, this is all his money anyway, remember.
But even still, this is such a great argument for private courts, because even if he really legitimately did wrong, a private court could do the calculation and realize when this is not worth pursuing and just cut their losses and focus more on more pressing matters. I mean, this is just insane, the amount of trouble they're going to here.
Yeah, and it's all because supposedly his file sharing service allowed people to pirate all of these copyrighted files and steal all this money from these big content providers, except that no one can actually show that they actually lose any money from piracy to begin with.
Exactly. They've got nothing but there where they've been stolen from. I can't just go to the police and claim something was stolen and then fail to produce any evidence that it ever even happened and expect to be taken seriously. Why does this happen here?
Say, if you're tired of the promos in this podcast, well, the patrons got it early and with no ads or promos. Just go to patreon.bogosity.tv and donate at any level. Hackers, terrorists, the NSA. But I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers. Backup sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.bogosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.bogosity.tv and get LastPass now. So we have several states here in the U.S. that have legalized medical marijuana, and a couple that have legalized it entirely. The drug warriors and state cult busybodies warned us of all sorts of horrible things that would happen as a result of all this, such as increased overdoses. Well, guess what? Once again, we see that exactly the opposite of their predictions has taken place. According to a report this year published in JAMA, that's the Journal of the American Medical Association, fatal overdoses from prescription painkillers dropped dramatically in states where cannabis is legal for medical use.
Who would have imagined?
And I remind you, no one has ever been able to show even a single case in the entire medical history of the world of a single person dying from a marijuana overdose. It's just not that toxic.
And the thing is, even if we suspend reality for a second and said that the doomsayers, everything they predict was true, that still would fall woefully short of counterbalancing all of the bad things produced by the war on drugs. And don't even get me started listing that. We'll be here all day.
Oh, yeah. I think we've covered it, maybe not sufficiently, but at least enough to give you the idea in other podcasts and videos. But, I mean, yeah, just like people are taking Vicodin and Percocet or anything like that, they switch to medical marijuana, which a lot of them are actually reporting is more effective. Of course, these opioids are all addictive, so the people say, well, marijuana's addictive. Well, so is their painkillers. But the thing is, since they're not taking marijuana in addition to the painkillers, they're taking it instead of the painkillers. And so according to the study, medical marijuana is responsible for an overall 25% drop in fatalities associated with these prescription opioids that people are taking for chronic pain. And they also expect it to continue to drop as more and more laws get passed across the country to allow people to do this.
Yeah, very good to hear about that, and I do wish those people the very best.
So in the paper they say, quote, opioid analgesic overdose mortality continues to rise in the United States, driven by increases in prescribing for chronic pain. Because chronic pain is a major indication for medical cannabis, laws that establish access to medical cannabis may change overdose mortality related to opioid analgesics in states that have enacted them. So in other words, basically everywhere else, because they're prescribing more and more of these painkillers, the overdose rate is going up, but in states that have medical marijuana, it's going down.
I'd have imagined.
They say, quote, Three states, California, Oregon, and Washington, had medical cannabis laws effective prior to 1999. 10 states, Alaska, Colorado, Hawaii, Maine, Michigan, Montana, Nevada, New Mexico, Rhode Island, and Vermont, enacted medical cannabis laws between 1999 and 2010. States with medical cannabis laws had a 24.8% lower mean annual opioid overdose mortality rate compared with states without medical cannabis laws. Such laws were associated with a lower rate of overdose mortality that generally strengthened over time. In secondary analyses, the findings remained similar. And they concluded, quote, medical cannabis laws are associated with significantly lower state-level opioid overdose mortality rates. Further investigation is required to determine how medical cannabis laws may interact with policies aimed at preventing opioid analgesic overdose.
Well, that's very encouraging. And hopefully some states will watch and learn, but hard to say.
But then it's like, how many more data points do we need? Every single time we try it, things get better with drug legalization.
To all the people who still try to defend this nonsense, I challenge you, go read up on who actually lobbied for marijuana to be made illegal in the first place. If you think it was poor bereaved widows whose husbands died of terrible cannabis overdoses, I'm afraid you're going to be in for a nasty surprise. The truth is something far more sinister.
Yeah, it's actually very racist if you look at how it started.
Yeah, because it was popular with the blacks. They didn't like that. They wanted a way to slam them without just slamming them for being black. So there you go.
And it was mostly those progressive Democrats doing it.
Oh, yeah, the Democrats, how they like to whitewash and say, oh, no, it's really the Republicans who are racist. Totally. They switched places somewhere in history or some nonsense like that.
Yeah, even though you can't actually find the place where they actually switched. But yeah, I mean, it's like it continues even today. The penalties for crack cocaine are so much worse than the penalties for powdered cocaine. Crack cocaine is used more by poor and minorities, and the powdered white cocaine is used more by rich people and mostly white people, and the drugs are about the same in levels of addictiveness and harm.
Robert E. Williams pointed this out, how when boxing was getting really popular, everyone was clamoring, oh God, boxing people are going to get hurt, we got to ban it. And he points out that scuba diving actually kills more people than boxing. So why is boxing getting all the flack? Well, simple. Because poor people box, rich people scuba dive.
If you're on the Wi-Fi in a coffee shop or hotel, anyone on that network can get your traffic. Do you really trust all of those strangers? For that matter, do you really trust your ISP? A VPN can protect you from prying eyes, disguise your location, and even foil government sensors. It's essential in this day and age. So go to vpn.pagosity.tv and you'll be taken to BoxPN. Starting at just $2.99 a month, you can get unlimited high-speed connections to VPN servers all over the world. And they don't log connections, so your privacy is assured. Traveling abroad, just VPN home, and don't worry about what those other governments are doing. Back at home, stop your ISP from traffic shaping and messing with the quality internet access you're paying good money for. You can connect from multiple machines at once, including your smartphone or tablet, and it supports all the secure standards, including OpenVPN and SSTP. Bypass sensors and surveillance with your own secure VPN connection. Go to vpn.pagosity.tv. Alright, so we've got some more news from the Gamergate front. We've talked about this before, but Tim, you want to get everyone back up to speed on what Gamergate's all about and why people are opposing it?
Okay, in a nutshell, Gamergate started with a letter that was written by a former boyfriend of Zoe Quinn detailing how she essentially slept with various reviewers, various people in the games media, and effectively was sleeping with them and getting favorable treatment by reviewers and and this ended up what started exposing a long line of basically all sorts of corruption in games journalism. It was found to be very common practice for them to give favorable treatments to friends, to people close to them. And of course, in response to this, they tried to claim, oh, they're just being a bunch of misogynists, because that's just the go-to answer for absolutely everything these days. They tried to claim it's just a harassment campaign, even when their side was found to be doing far more heinous harassment, as we're going to see here in a minute. And it's continued to this day. Some sites have wised up and adjusted their ethics policies, while some others are still doubling down and basically being complete children about it.
Yeah, so this is a story where we're talking about the anti-Gamergate people doing exactly what they accuse the Gamergate people of doing. And a lot of it revolves around this guy named Arthur Chu. What can you tell us about him, Tim?
That he's completely insane, I will start with. He's a very strong feminist supporter. He has made some of the most ridiculous statements you will ever see in your life, all in the name of defending women at all costs. It's really quite terrible, and it really does a disservice to both men and women.
And he's a writer for one of our absolutely most favoritist websites, Salon.com. So anyway, what was happening was there was this get-together of a bunch of Gamergate supporters, including a couple of kind of big names in the movement, like feminist Christina Hoff Sommers and Milo Yiannopoulos, who's been another vocal advocate of reform in gaming journalism. And so they had this little meet and greet at this bar in Washington, D.C., and it wasn't really supposed to be much, just a bunch of people coming together. They, I guess, had been talking with each other online about Gamergate, and they just wanted to come together and just have some fun, and they tweeted about it and things like that. And the hashtag for it is GGNDC. Well, apparently, Arthur Chu took a little bit of an exception to this, and he started tweeting about an internet hate speech movement. He started contacting the bar where they were meeting, Local 16, and started publishing emails, which we'll look at in a minute, but basically saying that they were hosting a right-wing hate group and letting anti-feminists gather to celebrate the harassment and intimidation of women in tech. And by doing so, he himself was harassing and intimidating a lot of women in tech because they were there at the meeting.
Yeah, get ready, people. You're about to see Sargon's Law in its most extreme form yet.
So we've got a Reason.com article from Kathy Young, who was one of the attendants, and she mentioned that after Chu got some backlash for tweeting about this, he posted a response saying, "Whatever, it's ending tonight with them meeting up there." Now, no one really knows exactly what he means by that, but a lot of people don't think it's exactly a coincidence that a few hours later, someone called in a bomb threat to the bar.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, you've gone to the level of Muslim extremists. Remember the time Muslim extremists called in threats to people they didn't like and everyone said, "Oh, I guess Muslims must be right after all"? Yeah, I don't remember that happening either.
Yeah.
Idiot.
Now, some people are skeptical that it's a threat, and I, for one, am always wanting to give someone benefit of the doubt on that. But it's actually much closer to being a threat than a lot of the things the anti-Gamergate people point to the Gamergate people have said and called a threat. Like tweets where someone has said to, like, you know, Brianna Wu or someone completely useless like that, something like, "Once you die, no one will care about you. You will leave not having made any contributions to this world." Basically just saying she's not really doing anything important. And they took that and wormed that into a death threat. Well, you know.
Well, there's the ones against Anita Sarkeesian, which the police said in no uncertain terms were found to be not credible.
Mm-hmm.
But the bar here, apparently these were taken seriously as the bar got cleared out and there was an investigation to it. So
yeah, and apparently there were a bunch of people calling the bar to tell them there was a hate movement. And that's when the bomb threats came coming in. And one was actually tweeted from a guy with a name that's in Cyrillic, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. But he said, quote, "I have multiple bombs placed around the area hashtag GGNDC is being held in. If hashtag GGNDC is not evacuated within the next hour, it will detonate."
Oh, these people are talking about something I don't like. I'm going to blow them up. Yeah, that's real rational people.
Yeah, so they also called the bomb threat into the bar and they called it into the police. And it figure at the time, yeah, it's probably just a hoax, but it's not really the kind of thing you want to take chances on. So they evacuated everyone. The official story was that it was a fire alarm because they didn't want there to be a panic, but they got everyone out and went in. They couldn't find anything, of course. And then something like 15 minutes later, they were back in the bar and back to, you know, just laughing and socializing with everyone else just like they were. So basically it ended up having very little effect on the meeting.
It's just like what happened with the Voice for Men convention, if you remember that.
It rings a bell. I don't remember it off the top of my head.
There was going to be a big convention for a Voice for Men. Karen Strawn and the Honey Badgers were all going to be there.
Oh, I like them.
And there was a bomb threat called on them that was severe enough that the original venue they were going to have it at just declined, and they had to spend a whole bunch of money having it looked into, and then they had to get a new place because now there was this threat on the board. And what was most ridiculous is, what did the media have to say about it? Just a bunch of snarky, oh, look at all these bunch of immature little woman-hating boys and blah, blah, blah. Unbelievable. Anita Sarkeesian gets a bomb threat that the police outright said was not credible, and she gets all the pity and sympathy in the world and all the soapboxes she want. And meanwhile, a possibly credible threat, at least it seemed at the time, happens to a Voice for Men, and we get a bunch of snark from the left-wing media. Absolutely ridiculous. I don't care what you think of people. That is not acceptable behavior, and that is pretty bad journalism there, I must say. And that is exactly why Gamergate happened in the first place, folks.
Yeah, and Young goes into some examples of how this is not at all typical for the anti-Gamergate crowd. She mentions Brianna Wu, who was pointing to these tweets threatening a sarin gas attack at the Penny Arcade Expo, saying, hey, you know, look at all these terrible threats that the Gamergate people are doing. Turns out it was a threat against the pro-Gamergate. The threat was from anti-Gamergate people against Gamergate. And when Wu found out about it, she just deleted her post. And she didn't replace it with one that was equally condemning of the guys who were really doing it.
Of course not. This is what bugs me so much about leftists. They bully people and then manage to spin the facts to make themselves out to be victims. They protect their own and don't give a damn about anyone who's not the we. They are the most hateful, cultist people in the world. They seriously make my skin crawl. This is why I've repeatedly said I would live in a world full of fundamentalist Christians over these people any day of the week.
And then she also mentions Gamergate opponents trying to get the Steam community to not fund a project by a pro-Gamergate game developer. And this particular developer is female game developer Jennifer Daw. So they're even acting against other female game developers.
Yeah, that's nothing new. The feminist movement have always thrown women under the bus when it comes to politics. Like Bill Maher calling Sarah Palin a cunt on TV. And they've got nothing to say about that. Why? Because Sarah Palin is not leftist.
She's in the not we.
Exactly. Or the women who are conveniently missing from the feminist list of heroes, like Ayn Rand, one of the most prolific authors of her time, especially considering she wasn't even writing in her own native language. Nothing to say about her, because she's not socialist. Or the more ridiculous example was, Prime Minister of Britain, what was her name?
Margaret Thatcher.
Margaret Thatcher, what's wrong with me? Anyway, yeah, Margaret Thatcher, first Prime Minister of Britain. I mean, that is absolutely incredible, accomplishment by her. Again, they'd have nothing to say about her because she wasn't leftist.
And I remember the Democrats bragging about how they got the first electoral vote for a woman with Geraldine Ferraro, when we pointed out that it was actually the Libertarian Party who got it in 1972 with Tony Nathan. They kind of stopped talking about the whole first electoral vote for a woman thing.
Yeah, as much as they hate right-wing, they hate libertarians even more.
It's all the same to them. It's the not we.
And it is incredibly sexist. Whenever people say that's offensive to women, what they're really saying is that's offensive to leftists. Because basically the whole message is all women think the same just because they're women. And I can't think of a statement more sexist than that. It's absurd.
So she also mentions Boston Magazine journalist Zachary Jason, who's really trying to get this narrative of Gamergate being a misogynist hate mob going. And this was about the Zoe Quinn affair that you were talking about earlier. Affair, I guess, in more ways than one. His misinformation about that has already been rebutted, but he's unfazed by that. And he cited an example of alleged Gamergate harassment in the form of a YouTube video where you have a hammer-wielding man in a skull mask calling for the death of Brianna Wu. Even though 2 months earlier, BuzzFeed revealed that that was the work of comedian Jan Rankowski, who was using it to satirize Gamergate. He was actually against Gamergate and was trying to make it look like that's how they were.
Guys, if your cause is really so righteous and Gamergate is really so bad, you should not have to be digging like this to find examples. You should be able to just list them over and over.
And she also mentions that Jason contacted her for comment while he was working on his article. Quote, I sent back a 2-page email answering his questions, but also noting that I thought many of them were based on a wrong premise, that Gamergate is an anti-woman harassment campaign. I mentioned instances in which people involved in Gamergate, including women such as Lizzie Finnegan, who is no longer directly involved with Gamergate, but is still sympathetic to the movement, and who now writes for the gaming culture magazine The Escapist, were not only subjected to severe verbal abuse in the social media, but had their personal information disclosed online. I also suggested he talk to two other female journalists who have written fairly, though not uncritically, about Gamergate, Tech Raptors Georgina Young, and Canadian feminist TV host and author Lyanna Kersner. That was the last I heard from Jason. He never contacted Young or Kersner and did not quote a single word from my email. He did, however, quote two.
Unbelievable.
So, I mean, he had the information right there at his fingertips.
But it wasn't what he wanted to hear, so it's amazing how these people think their feelings have any kind of bearing on reality. I'm sorry, people. No, they don't. Truth doesn't care what you think. I've had to accept that. All of us in the skeptical movement have had to. I'd suggest a lot of you grow up and start doing it as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's like they've got a narrative they want to tell, and they go looking for things to support it, as opposed to going out, researching the facts, and then determining from that what the narrative most probably is.
That's what I've often called breaking Sherlock Holmes's first rule. Never start with a conclusion.
So we also have an account from Milo Yiannopoulos in Breitbart.com, and here he's actually posting the email from Chu. Quote, Hi, this email is coming from out of the blue. My name's Arthur Chu. I'm a progressive political columnist who used to live in D.C. I have fond memories of attending events at your place and friends who speak highly of you. I was really disturbed to find out that you're hosting a meetup for Gamergate tonight. I really want to know if this is arranged with the knowledge and blessing of your management. Without going into too much detail, Gamergate is a right-wing hate group and harassment campaign that's caused tremendous damage to my life and the lives of people I respect. Please let me know where your establishment stands on the matter of letting anti-feminists gather to celebrate the harassment and intimidation of women in tech. Thanks.
You know what the most telling words in that email were?
What's that?
Without going into too much detail. I have no evidence I'm making this up.
Yeah, it's kind of like we did, was it last week or the week before? This one woman had made a claim about the pay gap that was just completely untrue that people are fine. And when she apologized, what she had said was, I shouldn't have given so much detail. I should have just told the vague stories and not given any names.
Oh, yeah, female comedian.
Yeah. And he also posts a Facebook comment from Chu, who says, quote, So yes, to momentarily borrow Yudkowsky fanboy terminology, and I have no clue what his problem with Elisa Yudkowsky is. But anyway, quote, I wear black robes. I am a practitioner of the dark arts. I rigorously manage my own thinking and purge myself of dangerous, unthinkable thoughts. Mind kill myself on a regular basis. This is what you have to do to be a feminist anti-racist progressive, i.e. a social justice stormtrooper. You have to recognize that there is no neutral culture. Neutrality is impossible. I guess he's saying if you're with us, you're against us. That culture is a cutthroat war of memes, and you have to commit to picking a side and setting yourself up as a neutral arbiter of memes is impossible and is a form of surrender. You have to constantly check your privilege and unpack the knapsack and all those other buzzwords. You know, this would actually be a really good parody of Arthur Chu's position if it didn't come from Arthur Chu himself.
I know, but it's like Poe's laws in full force against these people.
You need to understand that the only way to be rational in this world is to be irrational, that the only way to be fair is to pick the right side and fight for it. The people who genuinely win are the people who do this. The people who refuse to do this are the ones who sit on the sidelines and never even lose because they aren't really playing. And I'm not going to read out the rest. You can kind of see how it goes. But yeah, that's his idea.
Sounds like a manifesto written by a madman. I mean, how is anyone not disturbed by that? I mean, that was disturbing for me to listen to. That sounds like someone who was getting ready to who was loading guns and grenades as he was writing that.
Well, and it's just so fanatical. It's like you have to pick a side and stick to that side and purge yourself of dangerous, unthinkable thoughts, the ones that might actually cast doubt in your mind.
I know. That really disturbed me. Like, this is not a well person. This man really needs to seek some help. If he really thinks like that,
yeah,
that is not healthy at all.
So Yiannopoulos points out that the group that met at the bar was actually pretty diverse in something that the left-wingers, if they actually believe what they say, really should be applauding, because there were lesbians, blacks, transsexuals, gays, apparently Yiannopoulos himself is gay, and feminist professors who just share a love of video games and who want higher standards in video games journalism.
Oh, yeah, that's something else you see. Leftists preach themselves as being all diverse and everything, yet look at all their higher-ups. White guys across the board.
Oh, and I saw a meme the other day where it was Fox News commentators and contributors, where it was just a whole bunch of white people. And it's like, wait a minute, and I rattled off like the names of like 5 or 6 black commentators, you know, that they have. So it's just like they're just not including the black, they're just cherry picking and showing you just the white ones.
I mean, look at the Bogosity Forum. It's not very many people, and yet we got a black guy, we got a gay guy, we got a Christian. No one even cares that he's Christian.
We've got a bisexual, we've got a couple of furries.
Yep. And you got me, I don't know what I am, whatever.
Although I gotta say, that succubus Hawkeye or whatever she is kind of sexy.
Well, then she's doing her job quite well.
So Yiannopoulos says, quote, "Anyone still laboring under the delusion that Gamergate is a sexist, misogynistic, racist, transphobic, insert your bigotry of choice, movement would have felt deeply ashamed of themselves looking out on a room as diverse as Friday night's."
Or just claim that they were all in disguise or whatever usual excuses they try to give.
Yeah.
It's like when the Not Your Shield came out, they just accused them of being sock puppets. These people are so racist, they think all black people must think the same way, and if anyone doesn't, he must be a fake black person. I mean, is there any black person out there who's not offended by that? I mean, I'm not even black, and I'm offended by that. It's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, they came out with the Not Your Shield hashtag, and they said, oh, these are a bunch of just white guys, don't listen to them. And so they started taking pictures of themselves, selfies, with them holding up a sign saying Not Your Shield, showing them to be females and minorities and female minorities and things like that. Then they said, oh, that's Photoshop. So they started making videos. And they make a video and they'd say, hi, I'm such and such and I'm Not Your Shield. You know, it was just like they were doing everything.
How stubborn to be right can you get? Would you just give it a rest, people? You're wrong. Deal with it.
Yeah, the problem is not being wrong. The problem is just stubbornly clinging to your wrong idea no matter how much it's proven wrong. So Yiannopoulos says, quote, "It just goes to show how utterly the anti-Gamergate supporters have lost the argument. Their only myth of attack now is to call in bomb threats instead of coming down for a drink and a chat to find some common ground. And, who knows, maybe even have their minds changed. It doesn't surprise me that when an NPR reporter got in touch with me about the event and I told him to come down and have his prejudices challenged, he suddenly lost interest in the story. Gamergate is winning in spite of the headlines and prejudiced reporting."
Well said indeed. As a wise man once said, if you want to find out who the real oppressors are, just look at who you're not allowed to criticize.
Bogosity.tv and all of its services are hosted at GoDaddy. I've been very satisfied with GoDaddy's services and their wonderful 24/7 customer support for over 10 years now. So I'm happy to be able to give you this special offer. Just sign up for any new domain, web hosting, email, or other service and get 35% off with the code WOWNOBOGON. That's WOWNOBOGON. Because there's nothing bogus about these savings on quality internet hosting. Just go to GoDaddy.com and use the code WOWNOBOGON. Okay, this is choice. This has got to be one of Congress's finest moments. The House Committee for Oversight and Government Reform held a hearing on something we've been reporting on, the FBI wanting to put backdoors into encryption technology. Well, it turns out 4 members of Congress have degrees in computer science and I'll admit that's four more than I thought there were. And they're on the Subcommittee on Information Technology, and they questioned five witnesses on the topic of encryption technology and potential U.S. policy responses. And the two big fails as witnesses were the FBI's Amy Hess and Suffolk County DA Daniel Connolly, who represented the local law enforcement interests. The other three witnesses argued against backdoors and for strong encryption. But you gotta give credit where it's due. The finest moments in this hearing came from the members of Congress. Their subcommittee chairman, Will Hurd, Representative Ted Lieu, Representative Rod Blum, and Representative Jason Chaffetz, who was the chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. And just listen to what these guys said. I mean, this is just choice. Quote, this is Chaffetz. It's impossible to build a backdoor just for the good guys. Just the good guys can get this. If somebody of the Genius Bar can figure it out, so can the nefarious folks in a van down by the river. Which is exactly what we've been saying all along. It's just math, and math works the same for everybody.
Yeah, I don't know lick about computers, but even I can understand the logic behind that.
Well, it's very simple. Anytime someone says a computer program, or cryptography, or algorithm, or encryption, or anything like that, just understand, it's math. It's all math. So he goes on, quote, federal, state, and local law enforcement have never had more tools at their disposal to detect, prevent, and prosecute crime. It seems that every day there is a new, often startling story about the United States government's ability to track its own citizens. I recognize technology can be a double-edged sword, and many pose challenges for law enforcement, but we're certainly not going to go dark, and in many ways, we've never been brighter. Strong encryption prevents crime and is a part of the economy. People keep their lives on their mobile phones. A typical mobile phone might hold a person's pictures, contacts, communications, finances, schedule, and much more personal information. If your phone is lost or stolen, you want to know your information is protected, and encryption does that. Strong encryption helps ensure data is secure and allows companies and individuals to operate with confidence and trust. We have choices to make. Do we allow the 99% of Americans who are good, honest, decent, hardworking, patriotic people to have encrypted phones, or do we need to leave the back door open and create vulnerability for all of them? Because vulnerability, it's all or none, folks. It's not just a little bit, not just for the good guys, and that's why we're having this hearing today.
Excellent. The logic behind the back doors is ridiculous. Okay, first of all, can politicians be trusted? I mean, really. Have you, like, all the backdoor deals, all the cronyism that goes on with these people, are we really inclined to believe that not a single politician will ever get the idea of leaking these to friends or to someone who greased some palms? Are we really expected to believe that is never going to happen? And secondly, how good with computers is the average politician, let's be honest? I mean, have you seen the passwords they've been found using? Didn't we do a story on that? They had like 1, 2, 3, what?
Well,
like,
what's wrong with Monkey? Monkey's a pretty good password.
But there's actually ones who had password or even had their password on the factory setting.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people do that. It's amazing. Like if you go out and you see Wi-Fi hotspots that are just like in people's homes, and you try a password like Linksys or admin, you know, one of the default passwords, it's amazing how many you can actually get in. So then there's also Ted Lieu, and I actually watched the whole thing. I've got a link to the whole video in there, and I think Lieu was my favorite. He was really good. Listen to this, quote, as a recovering computer science major, you gotta love that, it is clear to me that creating a pathway for decryption only for good guys is technologically stupid. You just can't do that.
Exactly.
And so he took a shot at Connolly, who was talking about, no, we need to have these encryption backdoors. He said, quote, I respect your public service. I take great offense at your testimony today. You mentioned that unaccountable corporate interests, such as Apple and Google, are essentially protecting those who rape, defraud, assault, and kill. Yeah, Connolly actually said the word rape when he was talking about that.
It's just the magic win arguments word now. It has no meaning anymore.
Quote, I think that's offensive. It's a fundamental misunderstanding of the problem. Why do you think Apple and Google are doing this? It's because the public is demanding it. People like me, privacy advocates, a public that doesn't want an out-of-control surveillance state? It's the public that's asking for this. Apple and Google didn't do this because they thought they'd make less money. This is a private sector response to government overreach.
And that's why it bugs them so much.
Yeah, because the private sector is actually doing what the people want, and it goes against what they want, so much for them being for the people. He goes on, quote, "Then you make another statement, that somehow these technology companies are not credible because they also collect private data. Well, here's the difference. Apple and Google don't have coercive power. District attorneys do. The FBI does. The NSA does. And to me, it's very simple to draw the privacy balance when it comes to law enforcement and privacy. Just follow the damn Constitution. And because the NSA didn't do that, and other law enforcement agencies didn't do that, you are seeing a vast public reaction to this." That deserves some applause, if you ask me.
Wait. Was that a politician?
A politician.
Actually acknowledging the coercive power of government?
Yeah.
Are you feeling all right, sir? Do you need to lie down for a little bit? Aren't you kind of spilling the beans there a little bit?
Admittedly, I haven't looked at his record or anything to see how universally he applies it, but man, it's just like right out of our mouths, isn't it?
I do so love it when politicians suddenly find their morals.
Yeah. "If you want to get this fixed, I suggest that you write to NSA, and the FBI should tell the NSA, stop violating our rights. And then, maybe you'd have the public much more on the side of supporting some of what law enforcement is asking for. I do agree with law enforcement that we live in a dangerous world. And that is why our founders put in the Constitution of the United States, why they put in the Fourth Amendment, because they understand that an Orwellian, overreaching federal government is one of the most dangerous things this world can have."
Yeah, people, that book was a cautionary tale. It was not an instruction manual.
And there were a few times where they asked the reactions of the panel, all five of them, the two who were kind of shilling for this and then the three sensible ones. Robin Kelly asked, quote, "Could the existence of a backdoor created in the interest of public safety actually serve as a Trojan horse that cyber criminals exploit to their advantage? Witnesses answer in the affirmative."
Of course. You'd have to be a fool to think otherwise.
Yeah. Blake Farenthold asked, "Wouldn't a golden key become the biggest hacker target in the world if it were known that there were a golden key, and what we might have today that might be deemed secure as computing power increases might become a lot easier to break? Witnesses answer in the affirmative."
Now, if only they could realize that this applies to the idea of government itself. If you create a seat of power, aren't bad people going to try to get control of it? No.
That's all we do, is we take these same principles that are so clearly and plainly true, and we apply them to everything government does. And yet we're the extremists.
Yeah. Consistency in principle is extremism, apparently.
Yeah.
According to people who don't know what principles are.
Yeah. Farenthold also asked, quote, "Is there anyone on the panel who believes we can build a technically secure back door with a golden key? Raise your hand, and I'll recognize you if you think that can be done. Let the record reflect, no one on the panel thinks that can be done." But then you have District Attorney Conley responding to that. You know, listen to this, quote, "I hate to hear talk like that cannot be done. Imagine if Jack Kennedy said we cannot go to the moon. That cannot be done. He said something else. We're going to get there in the next decade. So I would say to the computer science community, let's get the best minds in the United States together on this."
That's called trite greeting card philosophy there, sir.
Yeah, because it's not math, it's magic. They can make 2 + 2 = 5 if they want to. It's something complex that I don't understand, so all we have to do is get them in their little rooms waving their magic wands and they can do whatever they want. We just need to pass a law.
I'm sorry, laws can't override the laws of mathematics, folks. They just can't.
And this quote from Conley, I think, just completely exposes him for what he is. Quote, "Can this issue be bifurcated in some way so that big corporate computer networks and so forth can remain encrypted without any sort of golden key, but devices like this, mobile devices, which are now the tools of terrorists and criminals, can be accessed on probable cause after a magistrate issues a warrant?"
Cell phones are the tools of criminals and terrorists now? I think someone's been watching way too many movies.
Well, it's like, the big corporations, we want to let them do what they want, but the things that the people actually use, actual cell phones and tablets and things that they use every day, those are the things that we need to get into. Those big corporations, we need to leave them alone.
Oh, jeez. There it is. There it is. Hanging out there all pink and naked, folks.
Yeah, I mean, if you think DAs aren't just as much in the back pocket of big corporations as any other politician or bureaucrat, you know, you're just deluding yourself. So I mean, it was just so great to see all of these things that we've been talking about pointed out in a congressional committee. And there it is, folks. No denying it anymore.
Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide the means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to Amazon.bogosity.tv, or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to Amazon.bogosity.tv.
And now it's time to throw salt over our shoulders into the face of this week's biggest bogon emitter. And this week it goes to Richard Fowler, who tried to tell Fox News' Megyn Kelly that free speech is something you just can't take too far.
And freedom of speech comes with limits, and this is a clear limit.
I don't see any limits in the First Amendment. It says Congress shall make no law. That's your limit. Congress shall make no law.
Yeah, it's a limit on Congress. It's not a limit on people. Do you not understand what the Constitution is, sir?
No, it isn't.
It's just like going
into a movie theater
and yelling out fire, or walking into a black church and yelling out the N-word.
No.
That's not free speech. Yelling fire in a theater is not expressing an opinion. That's actually lying, and yes, you can get in trouble for that, just as you could get in trouble for slandering someone.
Well, and running into a black church yelling the N-word, you're going onto someone else's property.
And if they did beat you, they wouldn't be justified for that. They'd be justified in kicking you out, but not beating you up for it.
Only if they did it in defense, if you tried to find them when they threw you out.
Yeah. But if all you did was yell and make an ass of yourself, then all you're entitled to do is throw them out by force if necessary, and that's it.
Notwithstanding the fact that the Westboro Baptist Church, as hateful as they come, offered hurtful and a speech which did not contribute hardly at all to the public discourse. It was negligible value. Nonetheless, free speech still supported allowing them to do it.
This is not about case law. This is about common sense.
It's that old go-to when they have nothing else. It's just common sense. After you've delivered this huge rebuttal refuting everyone on the point. It's just common sense. I hate that phrase, common sense.
Yeah, we don't care about common sense in these parts. We care about logic and evidence. Now, do you have any or do you not, sir?
There you go.
Total utter loss of common sense. It doesn't make any sense. Why would you paint a caricature of another group's God and say it's okay and laugh at it and expect them not to respond?
Because it's ridiculous and it should be laughed at. That's why.
Well, and it's okay for them to respond with more speech, you know, condemning them for doing it, but it's not okay for them to respond by beating them up or killing them or whatever.
It's just ridiculous.
The more offensive the speech is, Richard, the more protection it needs. That's how the First
exactly,
Amendment works.
Exactly, but it doesn't mean you should do it.
We can defend the First Amendment right to say it without aligning ourselves with the message.
It doesn't mean you should do it.
Well, our rights are not contingent on it being a good idea. Something can be a bad idea and still be your right to do it. It doesn't mean you deserve to get beaten up or killed over it.
Having sex with two women and not telling each other is legal. It's still not a good idea.
Yeah, and you might suffer some consequences for it, but that doesn't mean government should be stepping in.
You know what I want to see one of these days? Just to psych out the extremists, say, hey, guess what? I got a picture of Muhammad, and it's a picture of Muhammad Ali or something like that.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. They say you can't draw a picture of Muhammad, and yet how many of them are naming their kids after him?
Yeah, or Muhammad Ali named himself after him, because he was born Cassius Clay. He took on Muhammad Ali when he converted to Islam.
I don't know much about Islam, but I really don't see what the difference is.
I think Muhammad is kind of like John over there or something. There's just a lot of people with that name. Even before Muhammad, I think it was a pretty popular name. Of course, there are a lot of Latinos named Jesus, so there you go.
There you go. Say what you like about Christianity, at least they're not threatening people who make fun of them.
Not anymore, at any rate. I actually had someone say that they were defending what the church did to Galileo. Or was it Bruno? It might have been Bruno. One of them. And, oh yeah, it was Bruno, because they burned him at the stake. Because he was saying that the earth goes around the sun, and all the other planets go around the sun, and not the earth. And that stars out in space were other suns and might have other planets around them with people on it. You know, the real heretical stuff like that. And so they burned him at the stake. And someone said, well, that wasn't the reason they did it. It was because he published this treatise making fun of the Pope. Oh, okay. So burning him at the stake for making fun of the Pope is so much better than burning him at the stake for saying the earth goes around the sun. Yeah.
Not helping your case, people.
When people exercise their First Amendment rights and two jihadis show up to murder them, the relevant question at that time is not what were they saying. The relevant question is, what are we going to do about this group
you're putting,
of people
you're
that
cart,
wants to murder us because we believe in free speech
the
and the
horse.
First Amendment?
If they never had that event, the jihadis would have never shown up. That's the cart before the horse. It's just that simple.
No, absolutely not. The jihadis initiated the use of force. That is absolutely not putting the cart before the horse. They initiated the use of force. They are guilty. Whatever happened before that is completely irrelevant. Words can be ignored, and these people would do well to do so.
And if anything deserves to be called victim blaming, this is it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, where's all the anti-victim blamers on this one? Nope. Don't hear them. Of course not.
No, they're taking the people who are actually speaking out in favor of free speech and calling them Islamophobes or whatever the term is.
Because they don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Freedom of speech absolutely does not have limits. That's why it's a freedom. Look up the word, people.
So yeah, Richard Fowler is most definitely this week's biggest bogon emitter.
History is written by the winners, and so apparently is economics. That's why there's LibertyClassroom.com. Probably the best single learning resource for history and economics on the web, LibertyClassroom.com teaches U.S. history, Western Civ, and economics from actual university professors. There's lots of free material to get you started, including introductory lectures on all these subjects. And when you sign up, you get the full site's content for just $99 a year, less than the price of 2 cups of coffee a month. And if you type in the promo code BOGOSITY in all caps, you'll get your first year for just $88. Lectures are available in both video and audio format, so you can watch or listen to them on your computer, your phone or tablet, or in your car. Learn at your own pace about the subjects you're interested in and become a more effective debater. You'll also get access to lots of supplemental materials and even the professors themselves via the discussion forum and even live video chats. Inform yourself against the myths and propaganda of our society. Visit LibertyClassroom.com. And now it's time to power drain this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
And this week, it goes to Boeing. And I'm sorry, but every time I hear their name, I can't help thinking, Boeing, Boeing, Boeing.
I know. I never could figure out exactly how it's pronounced. I hate words like that.
But it's not the kind of thing you want an airplane to be doing, right? Boeing, Boeing. But thanks to a software bug, the Boeing 787 Dreamliners might have been doing at least that first part, cutting off in midair and crashing to the ground. And this is just a consequence of everything being computerized. Things are being computerized. Your refrigerator is computerized. Your toaster is computer. Everything's becoming computerized. And all of the instruments and everything in the airplane these days are computerized. They're all run by computers. And if you lose power, you don't have instruments. You don't have the radio. You don't have anything. So what happened was, this is a bug, and they haven't really released the details on the bug, but it seems obvious to pretty much anyone who's familiar with this kind of stuff. It's an integer overflow. We'll talk about what that means. But anyway, this is in the electrical systems that are responsible for generating power. And when it's been running continuously for 248 days, it can just cut out the power. Now, they've got, like, I think, 4 different systems and a backup doing that. So if they lose one, there's the others. But these all cut out at the same time.
Oh, dear. That's kind of frightening.
Yeah. So their memo says, quote, "This condition is caused by a software counter internal to the GCUs that will overflow after 248 days of continuous power. We are issuing this AED to prevent loss of all AC electrical power, which could result in loss of control of the airplane. After 248 days of continuous power, all 4 GCUs will go into failsafe mode at the same time, resulting in a loss of all AC electrical power, regardless of flight phase." So, I mean, you could just be flying up there at 30,000 feet. All of a sudden, everything just cuts out.
Jeez, I mean, how long does it take the average video game to get rid of all major bugs like that?
But, I mean, these are just those little things that can creep in. And it's actually pretty easy to do. Again, they haven't released the details, but it seems pretty obvious to people who understand how these things work. Anyone who's done any programming will tell you about things like a 32-bit signed integer, which is probably what this was, because a 32-bit signed integer can count all the way up to the number 2 to the power of 31 minus 1, which is 2,147,483,647. If you add 1 to that number, what'll happen is that number will spill over into that 32nd bit. But that bit is used for the sign. So when it gets flipped, it turns from a positive number to a negative number. So if you add 1 to 2,147,483,647, you get negative 2,147,483,648. Okay, so it's just a little weirdness of computers. If you don't understand computers, you're going like, what? That's crazy. But that's actually how they work. So why do they think that's what it is? Well, it's that 248 days. It sounds kind of specific. If you count in hundredths of a second, as a lot of computers do, 2 to the power of 31 hundredths of a second ends up being 248 days, 13 hours, 13 minutes, 56.48 seconds. If it's been up and running for that amount of time, then that's the point where the counter will flip into the negative numbers and cause these problems.
Has this actually happened yet, or did someone actually figure it out?
No, they found it before it actually happened, and they do maintenance every 120 days anyway, and you know, as long as you turn your airplane off and on again. You know, I always tell you, turn your computer off and on again, turn your airplane off and on again.
Yeah, I was thinking, they don't keep them on that long. That sounds kind of wrong. Like, the engine's got to need maintenance sometime.
Yeah, well, it's the electrical system, not the engine. But yeah, they probably do it. But now it's an official policy, just power cycle it when you do the maintenance. Now, the thing that makes Boeing such idiots, it isn't that they had this bug. Bugs like this happen. I mean, it's actually pretty easy to do and for it to slip by everyone. The problem is that when this bug takes down the power, it takes down everything. Controls, instruments, radio, everything, with nothing to back it up. They've made these systems so totally dependent on the computers that the slightest bug could conceivably take down the entire airplane. And we're fortunate here that this is a bug that probably would never have shown up in the real world, but you never know what bugs are going to creep in later and cause problems. Without any backup systems, not even backup power enough to make an emergency landing, Boeing has made their passengers very vulnerable.
Pretty shocking indeed. Nope, I'm not an expert on computers, but hopefully this will give them the insight to have a backup of some kind that's not connected to the exact same computer and thus prone to the exact same problem at the exact same time.
Oh, I don't remember if it was Boeing or which one, but one of them a few months ago, just all the security people in the world just kind of went crazy because before, you know, they have the Wi-Fi in the airplane that you can get on and get onto the internet. It was separate. And then this one airline company made it all the same network. When you connected to the Wi-Fi, you were connecting to the same network that the pilots were using. And they were like, what? No! No! You can't trust all the people in the plane. If they start designing, they're going to start hacking away on it. So all that makes Boeing this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Well, that wraps up this Hi, You're in the Part of the Plane That Falls Off edition of the Bogosity Podcast. As always, you can come to forum.bogosity.tv to read the show notes and join the discussion. This podcast depends on you to keep going, so please donate using the links on the website or at patreon.bogosity.tv. And feel free to join in by sending a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. You can even stick it in an audio file if you want. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Tim Dyson for joining me.
Pleasure as always. Till next time, folks, be aware and be wise.
Until next time, here's a quote from Bruce Schneier. It is insufficient to protect ourselves with laws. We need to protect ourselves with mathematics. Encryption is too important to be left solely to governments. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution on Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 ported license.
curiosity.
Do you want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not, based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims, and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again.